Hello and welcome to the SEAI's 180 Degrees podcast. I'm your host, Sinead Ryan, and over the course of the next 12 episodes, I'll be joined by special guests to talk about the state of play of Ireland's energy revolution, how we can be smarter energy users, what renewable technologies are coming into our homes and communities, and how small businesses can benefit from decarbonising now. Hello and welcome to episode 6 of the 180 Degrees podcast. And this episode, we are going to be talking about renewable energy resources. It's such an important topic at the moment. It's about how we can harness more energy from different sources for our homes, our businesses and our communities throughout the country. We're going to look at why renewables matter in Ireland's energy sources and future and the part that they play in powering the country. Now, I am delighted to be joined by Margie McCarthy, Director of Research and Policy Insights at the SEAI, and Dr. Lee Carroll, Programme Manager at Energy Statistics. You're both very welcome back to the podcast studio. Now, look, renewables. It is absolutely the watchword and the byword for where we want to go and where we want to be with our energy consumption in the future. But let's start with right now. What are we producing by renewable energy, and what renewable sources are the key ones that we have in the country? It's a windy day outside there, Lee. I think you're going to start with that, are you?
I will. I'll take that base. So approximately half of all of Ireland's renewable energy comes from wind, and 85% of our renewable electricity also comes from wind. But it's important to recognise that there's much more than wind out there. We also produce a significant amount of biomass that we burn in our electric power plants, in industry and in our homes. And there's also a very significant amount of biofuel blended into the petrol and diesel that drives our cars, trucks and lorries around the country.
Now, we wouldn't consider Ireland a terribly sunny country, but yet we see solar panels everywhere we look these days. So how big a part do they play?
So it's interesting. So solar is highly complementary to wind. That's one of the reasons why Ireland invests so strongly in it. It's no surprise that Ireland is a windy country, but it might surprise listeners to understand that there's like half as much wind energy in the summer months as the winter months. So the idea with investing in solar is to try and balance that out so that we kind of rely more on solar during the summer months and more on wind in the winter months. And that kind of gives us more of a kind of a balanced renewable electricity output throughout the year.
Now, we see the ads sometimes which are kind of saying, oh, is it windy out? Is it a good time to put on the washing machine or whatever? It's maybe what another generation would have called a grand old drying day to have a bit of wind. But when it comes to the mix of the two, and we will talk about what's ahead of us in terms of technology and all that a little bit later, but we are looking toward wind as the key driver. What about wave power? Because, gosh, goodness knows we've enough of that as well.
Yeah, so you're right to say that the Climate Action Plan puts a strong focus on wind. So at the end of 2023, I think we'd 4.6 gigawatts of installed capacity, but we're looking to get to 6 gigawatts by 2025 and 14 gigawatts by 2030. So there really is a strong focus on wind energy. And it's really because wind energy is perhaps a little bit more mature than kind of tidal or wave energy. And because the targets are so close, I guess we're going with more tried and trusted technology. So we know that technology for wind exists. It's only, and you know, in inverted commas, only, it's only the challenge of rolling it out that exists.
Okay. Now, Margie, look, we're back to the same old conflict that we have with all of this. Everybody is for it, but nobody wants a wind farm beside them. They're huge. They overlook houses. They're noisy. People can't get to sleep. They're ruining the countryside. You know all of those arguments. And yet, here's Lee saying we're doing more and more and more. What message would you like to give to people who are nervous about the number of wind farms that we will be producing in the future?
Well, what's really interesting, actually, is we do hear those messages quite a bit, but they are probably not representative of Irish society. And we had to, for new projects on in wind and solar, there will be, as we move forward, a community benefit fund associated with them, where a developer has to pay an amount that goes towards supporting that community that it's near. And so SEI conducted the baseline survey of homes and people who are living near and potentially near in rural Ireland a onshore offshore wind or a solar project. And predominantly what came back was overwhelming support actually for these types of developments in the near. So actually, even if it is going to be in your next door neighbour or at the back of your garden or within your view, people were predominantly supportive of them. What they thought was a really good move forward in government policy was actually having this community benefit fund associated. So there is a benefit back to society. So I suppose what I would say over and above that, so that gave us a lot of voices saying how supportive they were, is actually being actively supportive. It is really important. There's an awful lot of voices will come out and create big noise around concerns. And it's important that we are alert to some of those concerns and ensure that we have mitigation measures to make sure we're doing the right thing for the environment and for communities. But it's also really important for people to show their support in their local authority through the way they vote. All of that comes into play in the way in which we'll progress.
So that seems to me you're saying that it's a small but vocal minority that maybe shouts the loudest sometimes. And that when you get down to the grassroots and you explain to people and show them what it will look like. And of course, people are far more used now when they're travelling abroad or around the country to seeing wind farms and seeing it as becoming the norm.
Yeah, and what's really important is an awful lot of work and research goes into looking at the environmental impacts of any of these developments. Everything that we do has an impact of some sort, and ensuring that there is mitigation that's acceptable to how the technologies are deployed. So it is really important to hear concerns, but ensure, as you're saying, like having conversations with people, there's an awful lot there that proves that sitting down, explaining, listening to concerns and moving forward together is how we will make these things happen. And making them happen quicker is what's critically important. If we lose, you know, societal support, that really will be a big issue because we've an awful lot of work to do in deploying renewables across the country.
Now, one of the other challenges with, say, wind energy, which we hope to progress with and get much, much more of, is the whole area of storage and storage capacity. How challenging is that? How is it done? I think people see these turbines, me included, kind of slowly rotating. They're not whizzing around like a windmill. And you're like, I'm not quite sure how it works, how it gets from point A to point B and where it's all kept in the meantime. Can either of you enlighten me on that?
Yeah, so it depends on where you want to use the energy afterwards. There's actually some really simple technology solutions around storage for heat, for example. You can actually store heat in insulated buns of water that will allow you to supply heat out to heat networks. And similarly, there's some really amazing technology movements forward around insulating builder sand, so easy to access that in bunkers, and heating it when you have excess wind and holding on to that heat within the sand. It holds onto it for a long time and using that when the wind isn't blowing to heat back into the system. So that's, heat is probably your easier way to store energy.
I'm fascinated by that. Like that sounds a lot lower tech than I was expecting.
Absolutely.
You to say.
Yeah.
Water and sand.
Yeah.
You know, it nearly sounds old fashioned the way maybe we would have had ice houses in the past, or we would have had, you know, vegetables stored in dark, you know, soil or whatever. But if it works.
It works. Now, it works for the type of heat that you need for space heating or for heating your water. It wouldn't work for very high heat industrial processes, you know, where you need really extreme temperatures. So then you start looking at things that are already in the Climate Action Plan, for example, is using some of our wind between now and 2030 to produce green hydrogen. So we use the wind from offshore or onshore wind, and it goes through a process of electrolysis, which basically produces hydrogen. And we can store hydrogen.
We all remember that now from our old leaving cert, don't we?
Exactly. Right. Again, it's a relatively simple technique that we know.
Stuff it is that's been around for hundreds of years. We're not relying on brand new technology here.
Exactly. I suppose the thing that we have to do there is we have to get costs down, because you're using a process to produce hydrogen, and then you have to use a process then to convert hydrogen back into using it as a fuel. So it's a two-step process, whereas when you had fossil fuels, you tended to have just one process to produce the energy. So there are costs associated with that constant research and innovation will have to drive down for hydrogen to play a part. But it could and possibly will play a big part in Ireland's climate pathway.
Okay, interesting. Good to know. Now, I'm sure technology will play an increasing part, other types of technology in the future. And so will the direction, Lee, maybe of what other countries have done in this regard, maybe those that are slightly ahead of us. I know that Norway is one of them, maybe Iceland, relying on what their natural resources are and maybe distributing them a little bit better. What can we learn from other places?
So I guess what you need to take is to use your natural resources to your best advantage. So countries like Iceland, which have famously strong geothermal energy, they really lean into that for their energy demands. And Norway, with its very strong coastline and its access to wind coming from that coastline, they've really leaned into wind energy. And it'll be the same for Ireland. Ireland is naturally highly advantaged in its wind potential, not only onshore, but offshore. And really, we have untapped resources there. So really, what we need to focus on is realizing the wind potential that we have.
What stage are Norway at in terms of that generation exploiting? Because we're the nearest to that model.
So this is going to sound weird coming from a statistician, but Norway produces 110% of its renewable energy share from electricity, which means that they can satisfy all of their national electricity demand. And then they have 10% surplus to trade as an international commodity. And that's really where Ireland would like to be.
Where are we at, Lee?
Currently, we're at about 40% of our electricity shares coming from renewables, and 85% of that renewable electricity is coming from wind.
Okay, so way to go.
A substantial way to go, but the Climate Action Plan looks to double that 40% to 80% by 2030. And there's a strong plan and a strong kind of pipeline of onshore and offshore wind projects there.
Well, when you're looking at Norway and their far bigger country, is it that they have more of it or it's better?
So in some sense, it's a land mass to population area. So Norway is a very considerably larger country than Ireland is. And there's large areas of it that are substantially less populated than Ireland. So there's just more areas where you can place wind turbines. And as Margie said, without having done an environmental impact, and there's less people...
to complain about them.
A little bit, or there's a more maybe measured understanding of the advantages that it brings.
So I suppose in the sense of wind farms, it's exactly that, like hundreds and hundreds of them maybe, rather than the six or eight that we might have in a particular area.
Yeah, they really do have them kind of dotted along the coast. So if you're ever lucky enough, I haven't yet been to take a kind of a cruise along the Norway coast. Apparently, you have these beautiful images of the fjords and the spinning wind turbines.
Peppered with the exactly. with the wind turbines. Yeah. All right, okay. So we can learn from other places. They are doing it successfully. And in fact, when you see countries like Norway, and you can be a little bit kind of maybe envious of where they're at, it does serve maybe to spur us on and say, look, this is what's at the other end of this hard work that we're doing now.
Exactly. It shows what's possible, and what's possible not in 100 years, but maybe in a decade or maybe in 15 years. Mm.
Now, heat, of course, is a big issue for a cold, damp little island like Ireland. What are our options now? Because I know, Margie, we're still, as we spoke about in episode 4, we are still importing far too much fossil fuel-based heat energy. So tell me a little bit of good news about maybe where we're headed with that.
Sure. So, yeah, because we often talk about renewable energy just around the grid, and actually heat will be leaning into the grid. I'll get to that. But at the moment, we have a significant, I think it's about 6% renewable in heat at the moment. That means that we are 94% reliant on fossil fuels.
Okay, that's nothing at all, is it?
Well, yeah. I mean, we have a big dependence on gas and oil for heat in our homes and buildings, effectively. And we also have a use of coal and peat playing out there. And oil and coal and peat in particular are very carbon intensive. So, but we do have solutions, and there are considerable actions afoot under the Climate Action Plan. Deployment of heat pumps is a big one. They'll play a bigger part in the rural areas of Ireland, which maybe won't be as accessible for a heat network. I'll speak to that in a minute. And so heat pumps will have a large role there, and they'll obviously be leaning into our air source for ambient heat, and also in geothermal in some circumstances.
And converting them. Yep.
Exactly. Okay. And that will then also use some electricity, which, as Lee pointed out, is going to become more and more renewable share anyway. But then we also have potential for district heating networks. And you spoke about learning from our neighbours. Our Scandic and Nordic neighbours have been using heat networks for a long time.
Okay, well, explain to our listeners who don't know what that is, and I'm including myself there, what is district heating?
So, you know, most of us have a boiler in our homes where we have a fuel source coming into our homes, and then it heats, and we have central heating. So the way a district heating network has is it actually has an energy hub, and that energy hub is agnostic to what fuel you use. So in Ireland, we would like to use renewables for it in heat pumps and others. And then it pumps hot water through insulated pipes across a community of buildings, public buildings and homes. And it's really just an interface. It's called a heat interface unit between you and your and the network. So it's the hot water that's being piped rather than the fuel being piped. It's a very efficient way of heating homes.
And some people might have seen a small, or might be familiar with a smaller aspect of that, which I suppose are large apartment blocks, which just use one output unit. So you've constant hot water, lovely heat. Everybody's very jealous when they come to visit. And that's the start of it. We are actually going to have a special episode just on district heating, where we will do a deep dive into that. I think it sounds fascinating. It sounds very interesting about where that will all go. But for now, while we're on that subject, and it's a big bugbear of people who are maybe shopping around for electricity and gas in their bills, and they come across all these companies, and there's lots and lots of competition in this market, loads and loads of companies out there, which is great, offering consumers choice. And then you see on these comparison websites or on the bill, 100% green energy, 100%. Lee, I'm not hearing 100% of anything from you or from you, Margie. So isn't it the case that all this stuff is fed into the national grid? And in fact, companies shouldn't be declaring they've 100%. We've no 100% renewable on anything, or do we?
Well, I think what's important here is to recognise it's a global problem that we're trying to solve, right? And in a European level, we have a trading system. Lee mentioned in Norway that they produce 110% renewable share in their electricity. So when in Ireland, we have about 40%. So yes, generated on the island of, or in the Republic of Ireland and used within the system is at that level. But your supplier, if they're saying it's 100%. What they do is they buy it's a green certificate known as a guarantee of origin. And that's a kind of a trading scheme within Europe, which allows the supplier to buy certificates that's equivalent to the demand that they are supplying within Ireland. So that means that they can meet the difference between what's physically generated and distributed in Ireland by supporting and buying these trading certificates elsewhere. And as we grow to the 80% renewable in Ireland, that's going to diminish and more and more of it will be physically generated and distributed here.
Okay. Now, biofuel is a big talking point as well, because transport, which we've spoken about in the last episode, and I'm sure will continue to be a hot topic given the amount of emissions that transport is continuing to provide. So biofuel, Lee, talk to me a little bit about how much, what we can expect. This is a success story.
Yeah, so it's so COP speaks about transitioning away from fossil fuels and the inclusion of biofuel in the petrol and the diesel that we see in the garage forecourts around the country is an example of that, because every litre of biofuel that goes into your tank of petrol displaces a litre of fossil fuel. So 94%, so it's important to kind of put some perspective on there, 94% of the energy demand for road transport in Ireland is still coming from fossil fuel. But that means that just over 5.5% of the energy demand is coming from the biofuels that are blended into our petrols and our diesels. And I guess the real advantage is that that really doesn't require any behavioural change on the part of the consumer. They're just filling up their car, and their petrol and their diesel is slowly getting, very slowly, but slowly getting less fossil dependent all the time.
And where does that come from in the main?
So we produce biofuels in Ireland, and we also import them. So it's bioethanol that gets blended into petrol, and then biodiesel gets blended into diesel. So we have about, we're moving from an E5 to an E10. So those numbers aren't very complicated. So it's 5% ethanol in our petrol, and that's moving to 10% ethanol now in 2023.
Is this an easy win for the fuel suppliers? You know, I'm talking about the big guys. Is this a good win for them that they could not, I'm not quite talking about greenwashing, but that they can actually tick a box and say, we're ahead on our targets, we're using more biofuels. Are you seeing any energy on their behalf to kind of get this moving?
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily call it a win, because a win kind of implies that, you know, it's done, finished, you know, success has been achieved. But it helps reduce the amount of fossil fuels that we are using in transport. But there needs to be much more going on. You know, the Climate Action Plan calls for this avoid, shift, improved approach. So 60% of private car journeys in Ireland are less than 15 minutes. Mm. And 2/3 of those journeys are solo journeys, just the driver. So there's huge opportunity to move those onto active travel, cycling, or onto public transport. So a lot of it's about reducing our energy demand for transport, not needing as much energy, and then making the energy
when
that
we
do
need
to
it, then as much that is made
exactly,
of renewable
exactly.
sources, the better. Okay. Now, while we're on that kind of topic about what is being done by other industries, biodiversity in the farming and agricultural community, very, very important. We look at rewilding and, you know, we're told to mind the bees and plant our wildflowers and all that kind of thing. On a commercial scale, in an agricultural nation, and we've talked before about the huge contribution, not in a good way, that agriculture creates in terms of carbon outputs. Biodiversity, farmers are slowly changing. Is it quick enough, and could they be doing more? What do we want them to do ideally?
It's interesting, because I suppose we're focused on energy and an awful lot of the agricultural emissions. I think it's quite small, actually, the percentage of agricultural emissions that are energy associated. But the role that agriculture will play is starting to tie into our bioeconomy and our bioenergy. We've just talked about biofuels. So it's very important that the farming community are supported in ways that directs our movement towards the production of biofuels that's very sustainable. And that is, to go back to your previous conversation around biofuels, that is critically important, that whatever biofuels are being produced, whether it's imported or whether we're producing it in Ireland, that it's done sustainably and we don't have adverse impacts on the environment by trying to overproduce these types of fuels. And predominantly the way we're pointing to is they should be using waste first. Mm. So, you know, whether you're collecting food waste from restaurants, you know, things that you've seen in compost heaps, you can feel the heat coming off those things if you have one in your back garden. So they go through a process of anaerobic digestion that can produce gases and fuels for us to use. There were concerns around, and they continue, I'm not saying they're totally gone, around the use, for example, of palm oil and in unsustainable production globally for that. So what's really important in terms of our use and the involvement of the agricultural sector in the production of bioenergy is that it is done in a sustainable way, that we look at what are the criteria that are required to ensure that we're not having adverse impacts anywhere else, you know.
Okay, well, look, let's take a swing at the future then, because that's where we are headed, for better or worse. And the wind and hopefully the sun will always be with us. Talk to me about, and I know it's a kind of a controversial question in Europe, but and specifically in Ireland, nuclear energy. is considered clean and reliable? And do you think it is time we had a grown-up conversation about nuclear energy in Ireland?
Well, I suppose at the moment we don't have the legislation to support it, so it's not on our list of things that we can consider as options in SEAI when we're modelling out various options. I suppose what's really important as well is we are on a trajectory to 2050 for net zero. And the types of technologies that are available to support nuclear deployment, and we don't quite have the size in Ireland to support an awful lot of them, but there are modular pieces coming out. It wouldn't come into play in time for what we have to do. And if there's one thing that we have learned in all of the modelling around climate action and supporting the climate action planning in government, is that things that are ready to deploy today, they're the things we have to get moving on.
Okay.
And there's a huge amount of technology that is available to us today. And that really is, you know, there's lots of conversation and debate out there, but what about this solution? But what about that solution? But often they can't be deployed for 10, 15, 20 years. So we're going to be too far down our trajectory in terms of our carbon budgets to allow those solutions to play a part unless they can be accelerated. So we've got to go with solutions
with what we have
today.
Okay. And then finally, Lee, let me ask you if there is a similar podcast to this one running in another country in 10 years' time and they're looking to us as the model. What would you like to see, you know, us being able to boast about, say, in 10 or 15 years' time?
So I think what we can boast about even today is the pace at which we've added, you know, wind generation to Ireland. It's, without getting too technical, it's an asynchronous generation. It's quite challenging for the grid to accommodate lots and lots of little generators around the country. It's far, far easier to have a dozen big generators spinning. So that's something we can legitimately be proud of even now. And really, I think just the acceleration that we're looking towards, and it really is this, there's a really strong strategic growth of supply and demand in the Climate Action Plan. There's really ambitious goals in there to increase our renewable electricity supply. But supplying more renewable electricity has no value if there isn't a demand in the economy. So generating more renewable electricity, but then having more electric vehicles on the road that can use that, and having more heat pumps in people's homes that can use that renewable energy is key. It really is. There's a dance that's there between supply and demand. And I think at a planning stage, that's been managed particularly well in the Climate Action Plan.
Yeah, okay. So lots for us to do in terms of thinking how we can utilise all of this renewable energy that is coming our way, that you are working so hard and the government is working to achieve. So lots of hope. And I think this has been a very positive episode, actually, because there's a lot of kind of a little bit of backslapping and also a little bit of pushing to get us a little bit further. Thank you very much, Margie and Lee, for joining me today on that. That is all we have for this episode, but we are going to put up a mini episode next week, which will be me grilling Margie on some of the questions that come into SEAI on this very topic of renewables. So do check that out and see you next time. If you've enjoyed this episode of the 180 Degrees podcast, well then why not review and subscribe to it now? And of course, share it with family and friends to find out more about renewables and energy. Well then, check out seai.ie.